Miles van der Molen is the founder and chief executive of SEMAIR, and it's been a while since we've caught up on the local aviation industry. Lots has been happening. We'll find out from Miles today what the most important features are. Well, Miles, let's start at the place that most South African flyers want to know about. Holiday season's almost here. I saw there was a bit of research done by MyBroadband recently on the pricing, and it looks like South African Airways is back in the market in a big way and undercutting everyone else. I'm not sure how accurate those numbers are. I suppose whenever you do this kind of mystery shopping, you could, it depends on the time of day or whatever, or the time of the week. But from your perspective, South African Airways, are they back in the market in a big way?
Hey, look, good to be on the show again. Yes, it has been a while. They certainly have added capacity. They have an arrangement where they get some aircraft from Turkey during the European winter season, and I see they're back in operation. You know, I'm not exactly sure how many they have and what capacity they've added, but through their own fleet and through that wet leased solution, they have added capacity. I mean, I think most of that's being deployed domestically to all sort of narrow-bodied capacity, which is effective domestically.
Sounds interesting that you, during the high season, go off and hire some aeroplanes from somebody else and then presumably give it straight back to them after the high season.
Yeah, it's not an uncommon approach. In fact, it's become more common in the aviation industry in the last 10 years. It's a big line for us as well. The European winter season is very soft. So there is spare capacity, and it makes sense for it to come here for what is obviously a busier season in our summer and their winter.
And what do you do at that time of the year at SEMAIR? Do you also hire in new planes?
No, we have some aircraft that are assisting other operators with capacity. So we do try and bring some of that home for these periods. But everybody does what they can to manage the capacity through the peaks. You know, you can't run an operation on a busy December season. It needs a bit more than that. So you have to balance the priorities.
Before we move off South African Airways, what is the status there? We did know that there was a private sector grouping that was wanting to acquire control. That's all fallen apart. Is government now going to be funding SAA as it did in the past?
We don't really know any more than is in the public domain. So it has gone quiet. As you said, the Takatsu deal officially was canned some time ago. And I don't know of any new deals that are waiting in the wings. So as far as I understand, they simply carry on running their own operation. But the internal funding is a thing that's opaque.
Well, are they at least operating in a way that taxpayers won't have to bail them out again, which is something that has occupied or will occupy the minds of voters and no doubt some of the politicians?
The current financial status is completely opaque. They produced sort of 5 years of financials in one go. I think was probably issued, I would guess, around about a year ago. But yeah, I just unfortunately can't answer the question. I just have no information on the current status at all.
Are they taking market share away from the existing operators, though, by being more active?
Sure, they certainly will. They have a limited number of local destinations. They're on Joburg and to Cape Town, Joburg to Durban, Joburg to PE at this stage. I don't know of any other destinations they've added domestically. And then they have a fair number of regional destinations. I saw that they were looking to increase capacity to Harare, but the regional network has always been important to them.
And the Perth flight to Australia, is that doing well?
I don't know its status. It is a natural option because there's obviously a very large South African community in Perth. To rerouting is very inconvenient. You either go via the Middle East or via Sydney or a few other options. So it is a natural market, and I think they very likely will get good traction. I do know that they have been cleaning up the issues they had in the US, and it's strongly rumored that they'll be returning to the US shortly. And then there are rumors that I may be returning to Europe, but those are only rumors. Again, I've only got what's in the public domain. I know that the long haul and strategy is a thing that is being considered quite closely by SA.
That would seem to make sense, Miles. If you're going to go anywhere and you've got the landing rights in those airports at Heathrow in New York and parts of Europe, it would seem to be a smart thing to do. But I guess the big thing is at what price?
Yeah, the expensive routes to run and you need good loads. Perth, I think, their market's strong. There's a lot of point-to-point traffic between South Africa and the UK. And obviously, the likes of British Airways would be stronger if people are traveling on from the Heathrow to another destination because they continue with British Airways. But there's so much traffic that terminates in London, you could comfortably fill an aeroplane and not have that. The US, in my view, competing against those extremely strong American carriers, Delta and United, and you land in the US at their hub. So it's very likely that the bulk of people will be continuing on from wherever they terminate, New York or Atlanta. And then to continue with Delta simply is easier. You can have a single ticket with multiple legs. And SA would be at a disadvantage there because of how broad that country is and how the traffic flows into it. Whereas into Europe, into particularly London, there's so much point-to-point traffic. I think that naturally you have a stronger position.
We've seen the oil price fall. The rand has been bouncing all over the place. I guess so have all other currencies against the US dollar of late. Has the lower oil price had a impact on your business, for instance, and also on the local aviation sector?
Yeah, look, cheaper fuel always does help. So we're seeing a rand price of fuel that's below where it was about a year ago by an enormous amount, probably by 10%, which does help. The rand has been strong. The US dollar was weak going into the election. Obviously, everybody's watching to see where it goes now. But it's likely weaker dollar helps because most of our costs are dollar denominated. Parts, insurance, all of that really ultimately is a dollar-based cost. So a softer dollar and does have a positive effect, yeah.
So the last time we spoke, it was focused on SAFAIR, which has all kinds of questions over its ownership structure. Has there been an update on that?
Yeah, so there's multiple legs to the SAFAIR saga. The one that's moved forward is the matter before the International Air Services Service Licensing Council. They, a few weeks ago, issued a letter to SAFAIR saying that they have determined that their ownership structure is not compliant with the Act. And in the next 10 days, they will be issuing a sanction against SAFAIR. Another aspect is the domestic side. The domestic council is still reviewing the matter and in due course will make a determination. And of course, there will be a sanction that follows from that. And then there's a competition commission matter, which I haven't heard the progress on, but that is also in process.
So what's the issue here? Just unpack it for those who haven't been following the story.
So there's a requirement that airlines, South African-based airlines, are South African-controlled effectively. So SAFAIR is controlled by an Irish company, and in the terms of that holding company's financials, they say they have majority control over SAFAIR, and that's what the issue is. So all the other operators are locally controlled, and the controlling shareholding obviously drives capital structure and various other things and affects one's ability to operate, to grow, to capitalize. And SAFAIR is outside of that net, is the allegation.
And so what could the sanctions be?
So there's various options open to the council. Their license could be suspended, their license could be cancelled, or they could be given a directive to comply within a certain amount of time. So those are really the three options. In addition, they can be given a fine or there can be suit of criminal charges potentially. It's fairly broad and there's a lot of discretion with the council on that.
But that seems like a huge risk to take if you do have such heavy penalties for breaking the regulations or the laws in this regard. Their argument is that they aren't uh, that they aren't breaking the law. And that's, I suppose, why their court cases here.
Yeah, look, the stakes are extremely high. I mean, the rewards are great. So SAFE has access to Irish funding. ASL is well capitalized. If you look at their financials, they have large credit lines at first world interest rates. To have cheap money and to, in a very capital intensive game like aviation, to be able to operate with lower cost of capital in the environment is hugely advantageous. This isn't SAFE's first time around this matter. Before they started operating in 2013, various operators, Comair and Skywise, took them to task on the same thing. And it went to the High Court for an interdict, and it was awarded. And there's some fairly strong language in there about SAFE's concealment of their shareholding and their approach. So at that time, they made some changes. Then in 2019, they made a further wave of changes, which it's alleged are taken outside of the of compliance. And those came to light last year, and the complaint was raised.
But this is really serious stuff, because if you're operating in a country and it's got particular laws and you don't comply with those laws, then you don't really have a license to operate in that country. Do you think it's possible that given SAFE's dominant position or very significant position in the South African market, that their license could be a threat?
They do have a dominant position in the market. I believe they claim to have 60% of the market. The license should be a threat. If you've had this problem before, and you once again fall foul of the same regulation that had to be viewed separately or differently to a first-time offence, and it is transgression in no small way is the allegation. You know, between 75% and 100%, depending on how you choose to look at the matter, is foreign controlled. So it's not that there's, for example, a listed company where some overseas shareholder bought a portion, and it is silent. These are people in direct influence over the day-to-day runnings of what happens at SAFE. So it is very, very significant in the aviation industry, probably the most significant event post-COVID in the airline industry in South Africa.
So when is it all going to come to a head?
Well, the International Council has undertaken to provide their sanction by the 28th. SAFE's exposure on the international side is limited. They only have a few international routes, but it will be the canary in the cage for the larger problem, which is their domestic license. There will be rounds and rounds of appeal. I don't say there's any option but to take it to the greatest extent, or to the SCA on appeal. So that could it could last a significant period of time, the various rounds of appeal. And of course, once the domestic council makes their decision, the process really starts on that side. So the International Council is really the first the first event in what's going to be a very interesting process.
So that's coming up in a week's time, well, next week. And if the International Council rules that the ownership structure does contravene South African regulations,
they have already ruled that is mm-hmm. being determined. What they're the only thing they're providing next week is a sanction for that transgression. So they have already issued a letter saying that their view is that they are not compliant.
But then, if they've already ruled that way, why are the local? Why is the local situation not then moving forward?
It will, just in the fullness of time, the domestic council will make its determination. It's not impossible that they could take a different view. It is quite unlikely that the councils would differ on such a really simple and crisp point, but it's not impossible. But we'll see when the domestic council makes determination, and then, of course, its sanction will follow from there.
Miles, I guess the question here, and it's a bit unfair to ask you, is there any chance, because you're a competitor, is there any chance that people buying SAFE tickets now will not be able to use them in future? I mean,
anybody buying a ticket needs to understand the risk associated with that purchase. The matter that SAFE faces is very serious. Their approach, I believe, is irresponsible. They've told everybody that really there's nothing to see here. It's all grumpy competitors that are making up stories. And I don't believe once you've been found to be non-compliant that you should be taking that approach. I'm guessing that they expect to, you know, whilst the matter goes its various rounds of appeal, to be able to continue. But their approach is very similar to the 2013 matter. They took exactly the same line, which was that you know, everybody else is wrong and they're not. In that matter, they came second. So we have seen many of the documents associated with this. And I personally believe that SAP has got an enormous amount of exposure here.
But if they manage to muddle through after 2013, even though they came second, is that not what's going on in their heads of someone running that airline? If you were running the airline and you took that approach, okay, so we'll get a bit of bad publicity, we might have to pay a fine, but we'll muddle through. Let's just carry on business as usual.
Look, to comply with the regulations, they're going to have to change the capital structure of the business, and they're going to have to change shareholders, who controls what, and you know, that filters down to the capital structure, which is really the spine of the organization. So to comply would be a major change for SAFE. You can't simply rearrange the deck chairs as such. So it seemed they did take the previous round somewhat casually. As they, in 2019, they made some adjustments that are now under review. But certainly if they do survive this, I would say they would have to be very careful that at no point in the future are they ever even accused of a controlling interest issue.
You say if they do survive, so it's that serious?
Absolutely, it's a mortal threat, yeah. There's no doubt about it.
Existential threat. Now, they say that Semi and Lyft are attacking SAFE because you are struggling to survive.
We aren't actually party to the complaint itself. We're party to the Competition Commission complaint. My understanding is that Airlink and Global or Lyft are part of the complaint that's before the council. But yes, their approach is that the industry is wrong and we're just jealous, yeah.
And obviously you would deny that.
We just want a level playing field. I mean, when you look at your own holding company's financials and they say they have a controlling interest, they're really trying to talk out of the record their parents' version. So there's a legitimate complaint here. And to me, it's irresponsible to be tutting it away and just pretending there's nothing to see here.
From your own perspective, Miles, you've opened up a flight through to George now. Is that likely to be something that you'll continue after the holidays, or is it just a holiday thing? And then the second point was you were in the news recently over Plett, not flying into Plett. Can you give us an update there?
We've been operating to George for some time, and yes, it's a year-round route for us. Plett, unfortunately, there's an airport issue there. It's not related to us. The airport, the municipality, which is the airport owner and operator, entered into a transaction with a third party to take over management of the airport, and through that process, the airport got downgraded to below the level where we could fly there. It's been some time now. I think it's been 4 months, and there's no change. There's little communication and no change imminent. So it's very unclear which way the situation will go. Also going to end up in court with the hangar owners there having some disagreement with how the process was run. So one might be bogged down for a prolonged period of time. So yeah, whether we'll have operating direct out is yet to be seen.
Is anybody else operating the Plett into the Plett?
No, at the moment only private aircraft can land at the field. For a while, the airport is completely closed to all traffic. But they did manage to get a level of license issued, which allows private aircraft to and small commercial, but sort of 10-seat commercial airplanes to land. But fortunately, those aren't economically viable and not in our plans. So for now, effectively, it's a private-owned airport for all intents and purposes.
But that's very relevant because there are many people who live in Plett, or whose families live in Plett and do their businesses from the major centres. So are they having to drive then from Plett to an airport or to the closest airport to travel?
Yeah, absolutely. It's drive or stay. So you can drive to Georgia. Unfortunately, there's roadworks on the N2, I believe. So the drive was always a difficult drive and now it's become a more difficult drive. And PE is quite far. So it is very damaging for that local economy. You know, for 10 years, we operated that route, and it made a definite difference. You could see the local housing market benefited from it. A lot of people chose a lifestyle, coastal lifestyle, for family and their commercial existence for themselves because they could commute. So all of that has been brought to a grinding halt. It's very disappointing to see the lack of attention that it's currently receiving. The municipality there has had many difficulties over the years, and it's not, the map is kind of drifting at this point. So one would have hoped that at least at a provincial or state level, some pressure would have been applied. But if it has been, we haven't witnessed it.
The other issue that's happening right now in the aviation industry is the acquisition by Qatar of 25% of Airlink. Now, we've spoken a lot about foreign ownership or foreign control of airlines in South Africa, but to have a foreign shareholder as strong as Qatar Airlines would presumably give Airlink some kind of a benefit?
Yes. I don't think there's any question of that. Certainly what I've seen in the press, I don't think there's any question of that. It would be a compliant deal. That there's no reason to object. And good luck to them. Qatar is a very strong partner, obviously with global reach. At that level, it's advantageous. But you have to remain within the rules, and it seems Airlink has worked within that.
Have you never thought of doing something similar at SEME?
If a transaction came up, we'd consider it. But you'd have to be faced with the right transaction, and then you'd view it on its merits on the day.
Okay. And moving forward into beyond the summer season, if you do have a finding against SAFAIR and there is suddenly problems with them continuing to provide flights, how would the industry cope with that?
No, the aviation market has seen many shocks over the years. A few years ago, there was the Comair shock. Mango was a slightly smaller shock before that. There was the SAA withdrawal of capacity just before COVID. So markets always adjust to shocks. There's in the short term, there's some pain, but in the long term, it's all absorbed. So if there was a change in capacity, if you could say there's binary options with SAFAIR that, either nothing happens or everything happens. Of course, there is a middle road, but if nothing happens to SAFAIR, we would take a view that the local market is effectively not regulated, and it's a free-for-all, and would question whether or not it was viable. If SAFAIR stopped operating, yes, in the short term, it would really be felt, but the capacity gets replaced in time. And then, of course, there's a middle road where SAFAIR might take an injury and reduce size and change its form. And bumble along in some new capacity.
Why is it such a controversial sector of the economy, airlines? We've had Comair collapsing. We've had South African Airways needing hundreds of millions of rands in bailouts. Now you've got SAFAIR who are contravening, in your mind, contravening the rules. Why is it that this happens in this sector? It seems a little bit off the wall if you look at it from the outside.
Yes, there has been a problem with compliance. When you have one, like we did in a previous phase, when you have one operator that has the benefit of artificial funding, it's very difficult for anybody else to prevail. And I guess that's not really any different to what we're seeing with SAFAIR. When you have access to the Irish capital and equipment and various other things that they've benefited from, it does skew the market in somebody's favor and makes it very hard for everybody else to survive. So what you need is you need a level playing field. You need the rules evenly applied. SAFAIR match has been going on a long time. So the longer it goes on for, the greater the injury is that the rest of the industry has to carry. But, if you have a compliant industry that has to fund itself through normal means, and there's no skewing of the playing field for any particular operator, in time, I think you'll see that stability. But whilst we go from event to event where one operator generally has an easier road, it means the failure of the other operators is far more likely or even assured.
So with South African Airways, it, it was proved that it wasn't too big to fail, even though it was a dominant player. It appears as though in your mind there's a similar situation with Safair. It's not too big to fail. In other words, if the license were withdrawn, the industry would balance itself again.
Well, you can't have a situation where non-compliance at a large scale means that you somehow get some protection because you benefited so vastly from your crimes that you suddenly are indispensable. That just it cannot be an allowable outcome. So if you're not compliant, it has to be resolved. It has to be resolved appropriately. Otherwise it's like saying, well, if the mafia gets big enough, then you just have to let them keep going because they run everything. That logic is faulty in my view.
Mark van der Merwe is the founder and chief executive of SEMAI. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.